IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome to episode 82 of the Killing It,
Killing It
Podcast. So I don't know if you guys even listened to the last one, but it sort of ends with you guys laughing. So
we find ourselves very funny, apparently.
Sometimes we crack ourselves up a lot.
Exactly. Well, we literally just spent 49 minutes BSing instead of preparing for the show. So
right, our warm up was an episode and a half.
Yeah, well, and somewhere in the middle of it, oh hey, wait, that was a really good comment Dave just made. We really wish we had been recording.
Yeah, I wish we had recorded that. Oh well, it is what it is. So
oh, yeah, there's a whole conversation like, oh, we should have recorded that. Oh well, that'll come back around. Yeah, although well, for humor's value, Ryan has the dual office thing going right now with his green screen for the listener who can't see it. So half of it is his office, and the other half is the beach.
An ocean is flooding his office.
Exactly. It is a view in the digital window out into a very beautiful landscape. They say that, you know, your view out your office window defines a big segment of your quality of life. So if I can't have that actual view out my window, I might as well simulate it for everybody who's looking at me through my camera.
But does it say that mine is like the sidewalk by my house? Because my basement office, I've got one of those window well things. I look up and it's like I can see people's feet sometimes.
Mine is the window at my house, but there's squirrels going back and forth across the street, and the neighborhood cat wanders in and out, and I have a bush full of hummingbirds and bees, people walking their dogs, and it's not horrible.
So I'm nature. The only one with not a proper window.
Nature is soothing. It is a very appropriate way to look at it. But the reality is in video production mode for a couple of client projects. And so I just have decided putting up the green screen and taking it down, that's a lot of work every time you got to do that. So in the last week, I've just left it up, and I've done a lot of conference calls where they're like, Ryan, what is that great big green window behind you? Oh, I forgot to turn on the virtual background.
I will give you and all of our listeners my favorite trick on this then. So I installed those lines that are clothing lines that they have in hotels, little zip things. And so what I actually have then is I can pull these cords across my office and clip them on the wall, and it's retractable. And then my screens are just on little clips. So I just hang them up, like I can hang it up real quick and then I can take it down real quick, or they're like curtains. So I can swing them to the side when I'm not using them. Right now, I had done some video this morning. So my quilts are hanging like over in the corner. It's a quick way of moving it around, but it's actually super easy because I don't have to build a whole stand. I don't have to build the whole stand thing or any of that.
If you've seen my brother Manuel's videos, he's got a thing he got on Amazon that holds three different pull down slides. And so he's got like these, he's got a green screen plus he's got two of these, you know, images where they're spectacular. And they were like, I don't know, cheap, you know, but he just pulls them down and has whichever one he wants at any given time.
See, so we are living in a new world, and that new world indicates, hey, the only thing anybody's ever going to see of you in the near future is your digital window. You should probably be in charge of your digital window.
I swear I'm wearing socks.
Exactly. As far as you know, I have pants on.
I'm not.
All righty then. We should probably do a show.
Well, why don't we do a show? Because this, I'm going to start with like my epic rants, I feel like, on Business of Tech lately have all been around talking about connectivity. We're going to include a particular link to an article from The Verge. This is just like an example. The New York Times had one yesterday. I've got a couple of rants on coverage in this. This one's kind of really interesting because I liked the way they went into depth around some of the online schooling around rural America and the problems not just we talk about also about the economic problems, but this one focuses on geography, where, you know, in some places, because it is so remote, connectivity is a significant problem for these rural districts. And it comes down to, in some cases, you know, they're trying to make phone hotspots work, and they can't, it can't handle both video calls and distance learning. I've been digging into this. I recently learned, you know, the FCC considers 25/3 as fast broadband. Let's think about that, everybody. 25 down, 3 up is considered fast broadband. Oh, and by the way, the carriers are a long way from actually deploying that everywhere. The conversation here I wanted to have is I want to think about this and get your guys' sense on the kind of what is the problem, and how I think it's holding up the market. I think this is holding up everybody's ability to do this. And I've started thinking about the idea of, you know, is connectivity really a utility? Do we need to think about it the same way we think about the electrical grid, the water deploy system, or the post office, right? That we subsidize it so that it gets to every American, so that every American has connection to the government, to business systems. Oh, and by the way, you build whole businesses, I don't know, Amazon, on top of that, that are incredibly successful. I'm throwing it to you guys, like, where's your head on this connectivity problem?
I think that we are actually past the point where connectivity should be universal. I mean, if there's so many things where, when I think about how I, you know, flush my tax dollars, so much more service can be provided instantly over the internet than having me go stand in line somewhere. But that requires that there be a way to, for me to get online. And, you know, I thought you were going to mention the stat where the FCC looks and says one address in a zip code qualifies for connectivity in their map. So you were assumed to have been served by broadband if one address in your zip code has internet connectivity. That is not enough for people to be able to do their business. And education, I think, is the most obvious thing where we want everybody connected. But a household that can't run a business and can't educate their children, I mean, seriously, that's something we need to take care of.
Absolutely. And I would agree with the fact that we're past that tipping point, but society doesn't tend to get on board with these kinds of utility style requirements until there is an emotional hook, right? I believe that many years ago, we passed the threshold where if you do not have reasonable, ubiquitous connectivity, you are being left behind by the modern economy. You can't have certain jobs. You cannot participate in e-commerce. There's a lot of entertainment. But the society tends to look at those things and say, well, I mean, is it really mission critical for every citizen to have access to Netflix without buffering? Probably not. We consider it a privilege, and therefore we're not going to invest in it.
I don't know, Ryan. That sounds like torture.
I know. Exactly. But
well, until you're closed inside for 7 months.
Yes, exactly.
You're only, you know.
When you get closed inside for an extended period of time, everybody feels the pain extra. And then you put little kids at home disconnected and fundamentally disadvantaged in their education, and people get an emotional hook. I'm of the opinion, we've talked about this in previous episodes, that distributed connectivity is the way of the future, right? Like, I believe that this will be a bigger technology revolution than when we went from client server to the internet and from the internet to the cloud. Going to distributed access will be a tidal wave of technology investment and opportunity. But the only reason that our society will choose to get behind it is because you can say, but what about the children? And when you can finally make that hook, people get emotional and people go, okay, fine, this is ridiculous. Now, there are legit solutions out there for solution providers locally to provide band-aids that can overcome these kinds of things. School buses with a wireless router deployed that you can park it in a parking lot somewhere and service the surrounding 20 homes. that's cool, except for the fact that it's pathetic that that's as good as we can get for these rural communities.
Well, so what's interesting, Ryan, is I think there's actually more opportunity here. And I was reading up on what they're doing in Fort Collins, Colorado, where in 2018, the municipal government, you know, essentially sued and won the right to build their own municipal network. Of course, you can appreciate that was public-private partnership because they had to bring in, you know, right, solution providers to actually help build their own local fiber network. And they're now delivering fiber around Fort Collins, went live this year, perfect timing, you know, where it's like fiber connectivity for like $59.95 a month to the whole city. I actually think that there's, if I was just looking at this commercially, I think there's an opportunity here for providers to engage local governments and just take this on as a local thing and build an actually really good business of delivering it. Because by the way, not only are you building the basic connectivity, but then of course you can build all the business on top of that, right? Like all of the businesses that you've now connected and the pieces that you can offer to them beyond that. And I look at this and say, if I was looking for just the commercial answer to this, it's like some enterprising solution providers listening to us right now going, yeah, I could do that in my town. And then I think the other angle on this is, you know, looking at, I think it's reasonable to start lobbying local governments to address this as a commercial project for the sole purpose of opening up the economy and delivering resources to citizens.
And there are a handful of cities across the United States and in other countries that have said, look, that's what we're going to do, you know, broadband everywhere, wireless everywhere, that kind of stuff. And, you know, a lot of it happens with public-private cooperation, right? That some company says, you know what, we're going to help turn this into one of these amazing hubs, and that will grow our community and build me a workforce that knows how to use the internet. You know, you mentioned the post office. It's always an interesting example because it was far more important 150 years ago than it is today. Right? Today, I have FedEx and UPS and I have the internet, right? I have other ways of getting things around. And so,
But you live in a city.
But I also...
Because remember, all those companies use the post office as their last mile in rural areas.
Right. But that's what I was going to say is that at a minimum, I know that if I am in the middle of freaking nowhere, Alaska, you can send me a letter. It will eventually get to me. And that is sort of like, what is the minimum service that is absolutely guaranteed to everybody? Because it is far less important to me in the middle of a city, you know, a second tier city in the United States, than it is to somebody who is out way, way, way out in the boonies. It's a very good analogy to the internet, except the internet has sort of notched up to where the post office used to be. I could see getting rid of the post office because we have the internet. But that means that we then have to do with the internet what we did with the post office.
Which is exactly what we're saying, is we ain't there yet in terms of the internet. Now, I'll go back to a previous life and talk about why, Dave, I think you are 100% on target with the way to approach this. So we all remember Paul Allen, right? One of the godfathers of our industry. And he's best known for his work at Microsoft. But I would argue that his most important work was the last mile of connectivity, moving through his Vulcan Ventures program into rolling up cable companies in very small rural communities to establish ubiquitous broadband via cable, coax, right? Like that was his plan in the 90s and into the early 2000s. And I believe it ushered in the internet age, because you can have all of the hardcore infrastructure you want, but if you can't get it to the last mile, then it's just not a viable solution. That is what's next, right? And it doesn't have to be hardwired, because anybody who's ever been around the telco business and cable, we understand how many hundreds of thousands of dollars per mile of fiber it costs to run this stuff in the ground. Wireless is the new platform. The last mile is the new solution. And you can start this stuff locally. God bless Fort Collins for doing the right thing. Let's all follow that model.
Yeah, I think there's big opportunity. And as I said, I don't think every listener on this podcast is the one who's going to go, oh, this is for me. But one or two of you are going to go, yeah, I see that opportunity.
Absolutely. Ben,
what's your favorite topic in the world?
Mine or Ryan's? Because this always gets interesting.
It's the very same coin. It's just the polar opposite sides of that coin, right? So our second topic today is my next opportunity to say the words digital transformation. And watch Dave's hairstyle.
Not digital transformation again.
So the concept here, and again, I believe it's more than terminology. I think it is the wave of our business development going into the next generation. We're linking to a couple of articles for today's conversation around what are some strategies for digital transformation and what are the obstacles to this. Lots to say on both of these sides. What I found fascinating in the article is that their first gateway to digital transformation is focused on cybersecurity, right? Like that, I believe, is 100% appropriate. Please do not digitalize anything in your business unless and until you can make it secure. But then, if it's such a great idea and it possesses so much economic potential, why is it that so few companies actually get there? I have so very many opinions about the obstacles and why people aren't successful. Let's talk this through. So why do we believe that this is a timely conversation to continue down the path of digital transformation? And why is it that so many people suck at it?
Because it's a bad idea. Wait. All right, let's put my objection always has been is I consider this what you're supposed to be doing for business. So let's just put that aside and talk about what actually is failing here. And what's interesting to me is that it's failing. You know, when I dig into these reasons, they're kind of basic, right? They're like, they're not planning. They're not standardized.
People resistant.
People resisting. It's like, wow, breakthrough. These are like completely unheard of objections. You know, so don't get me wrong. I think this stuff is important and I want to research into this, but it's the like, yeah, it's all the same reasons. It's like people aren't planning. People aren't
standardized. And that's kind of it really, because the reason fundamentally I think that Dave objects to digital transformation is it's just another word for the way you should be doing business, because this is the 21st century and we have electronics, so we should use them.
Right. That is true.
And so, you know, why a whole article on why it fails comes down to the why anything fails. Right? You want to get everybody to adopt driving Hondas? Okay, let's go do that. You're going to see some people don't want to, some people are resistant, some people just don't like the brand name. I mean, it's kind of the same thing. If you can't get your employees to adopt something that makes you more money, you need different employees.
Right.
Yes. And yet, right, let's pause here so that we don't skip over the monumental progress and transformation in our own conversation. We have arrived at a point where we say, well, of course everything should be digital, and of course you should be transforming every element of your operation to be digitalized. Okay, a year ago, everybody was saying, well, in certain areas and for specific use cases and in specific industries, maybe this digital transformation is relevant, but not for everybody, and it shouldn't be the center of the conversation. Except now, what both of you guys have just said is, oh no, it's ubiquitous. Everybody, every business should be making every element of their operation digital. Except I heard in a conversation this morning a comment that I thought crystallized everything, right? The reason we're not going there yet is not just because not everybody wants to. It is because people are, while change must happen, people are bad at causing change in a predictable, successful environment. The comment that I heard, we were talking in the context of digital platforms and technology in education, right? So whether it's remote or in the classroom, whether it's about student devices or whatever, there was a comment from a district technology leader in a significant environment. The mantra they have adopted is teachers who embrace technology will replace those who do not. Now, That seems obvious. That seems like a pretty compelling, simple mantra to have. Except, do you feel the emotional pushback from the teachers who do not? Do you, every business that embraces technology will replace those who do not. Okay? Yes, except for that those who are presently in power and do not have digital technology, they're going to push back on this. They're going to call it stupid. They're going to say a thousand reasons why we shouldn't do that. And they're going to fight for survival. This is now an assumption. And now we got to figure out how, not if, how.
Well, so 100%, I'm 100% with you. And, you've said it in a really nice, succinct way.
Many words.
But it's important because people need to recognize that that resistance is what you're fighting. It's the, look, the people side of this, the process side of this, the culture side of this, that's the hard part. That's what they're pointing to in all of these reasons. It's managing that. By the way, it's profitable because it's hard. Like if this, let me observe, if this stuff was easy, everybody would be great at it. Like putting your time here is where the money is because it's so hard. Taking the time, investing in the people, the culture, in the retraining, in the management, like in making sure it's successful all along the way. Yeah, it's really hard. I'm glad it's really hard because that means I can go forth. Yeah. And
put in one little note though, that Ryan, you said everything all the time, always on, everything should be electronic or everything should be digital. I'm not making that argument because at some point, right, I have behind me a wall that was hand painted. There's a mural that a human being came in and actually painted. I want that kind of art in my life. Right. I want some non-digital stuff.
Well, let me give you a good example too, that I want to link to the last topic is, by the way, you were dissing on the post office. I'm going to say election and ballots as yet another one where it's like, not quite ready to make that all digital, my friends. But
well, and yeah, we need to move on. But I just wanted to say that there are some things where the totally non-digital, there are people that they're super happy. They know they could make more money if everything was digital, but you know what? They've got one of those little snap together folders and they put your check in there and they carry it around for 3 or 4 weeks before they remember to put it in the bank. And it doesn't bother them a bit. They're successful. They make enough money and they don't need you to tell them that everything needs to work on their iPhone.
No, they see, want to precedes can do. In every situation, right? We have all of the technology. We have all of the tools to facilitate this. But isn't it funny how many times we in the technology industry do things because we can, not because people actually want to? Product managers should probably take a little bit of insight and figure out what the people want as opposed to just build it because you can.
Yep. Alrighty. Sadly, we're out of time on that. So we'll move on. Final topic of the day, life after COVID. And I got to say, I love that we're actually discussing this head on because there's been too much assumption that the whole world has changed and we can never go back. And all of these businesses that went home are going to stay there forever. And people are literally buying houses out in the boonies because they know they never have to go to the office again. I think we need to take a big grain of salt with all of this futurism about what the world's going to look like. I do think your office will be smarter. I do think that this is one of those watershed opportunities for everything to be a little more secure and everything to be a little more connected and for us to be a little more remote. But, you know, I don't know about everybody here, but I can tell you, I look forward to going and talking to people face-to-face again and doing business face-to-face and going to their offices and meeting with them in person and doing sales with an actual handshake. And so we've got a couple of articles here about, you know, kind of speculating about what the future looks like. But I gotta say, a lot of it's gonna look a lot like it did 8 months ago.
A lot, but a lot is a vagary. You know, and I tend to be on the transformation spectrum side of this. I think because I've been seeing a lot of investment in businesses that are rethinking this. There's a new phraseology that I'm embracing coming out of IDC around this idea of digital parity, the idea of making sure that when you are working in the office and you are working out of the office, that you have the same connection, communication, tool set, and ability to interact in real time. That locate that they are removing the location as a necessity.
Right.
I look and say that's the trick for me is where I can do based on what makes sense for me, for the task, for my own lifestyle, for whatever all of those bits. I'm with you. Like I miss people. Now, I don't miss everybody, but I miss some people. Like, you know, I miss some things about that. But there are other things that I don't, right? Like, so for example, when you look and say, like, there are things that I used to do. I am the one person who went to London for 24 hours, like flew, did an hour presentation in their studio, and then I flew home. Like it was, and you look and go, like, that was the only way to do it, right? Because you had to be in the studio. Now everyone would go, oh yeah, totally do that from your home studio. That will be fine. I'm quite looking forward to that, to not spend 16 hours on a plane to work 1 hour.
Right. Like, I guess what I would say is I'm sort of a believer that somewhere in the 25 to 30% of these predictions, like we will adopt this stuff and not go back because it just makes sense, right? We will be doing way more sales calls over the internet than at any point in history, but a little fewer a month after the COVID is done than we have today.
Well, but that's
some of us will go back and do it the old way.
But see, I think you're on to the heart of this topic, right? We will go back when we want to, and we will work remote when we prefer to. That is what I think is the desired outcome, not in the office because you're required to and because you just don't have the technical capabilities. And certainly not because your micromanager of a boss doesn't trust that you're trying if they can't be watching over your shoulder, right? I think that there will be things that are going to wind up in the office because we prefer them that way, that human-to-human connection. But then there are many other things that can be remote. Now, to the spirit of our topic here today and the articles that we're linking to, there's been a lot of focus in the last 7 months on how do we facilitate work from home with all of those devices and connectivity and cameras, et cetera, getting it up to par with the in-office experience. By the way, do not lose track of the fact that most in-office experiences suck from a technical point of view, right? Most office buildings don't have good cell phone coverage, especially inside the cement bunkers that we work in. Most of them do not have ready access to all of the systems and the data resources that people need to do their jobs effectively. Most of them have no screening technology at the doorway or in the lobby, et cetera. And this is going to lead to one of my pet topics in our industry. As solution providers, when you go back into your clients' offices, it will no longer be just about monitoring and managing server storage, network, desktop, laptop, classic Microsoft stack of technology. There will be building sensors, there will be electronic systems, there will be HVAC, there will be screening technologies, both video and temperature. There will be a lot of IoT devices that A, need to be designed and deployed effectively to make the working office modern. And then those things will need to be monitored and managed by somebody who that company does not have on staff, cannot afford to bring on staff, needs to outsource to an MSP. This topic is, I don't insist on 100% remote, everybody, everywhere, all the time going forward. Let's embrace both sides. And damn, there's a lot of business opportunity on both sides.
Well, and I think, and I agree, I mean, I'm with you on this. I think I'm probably the more, like Carl's probably the least change, Ryan's in the middle, and I'm probably tending toward most change. I think there's a lot of bits that are worth changing. Like, look, I'm the guy who for, you know, a decade or more has always worked remotely and has just fought cultures where it's like, they just don't get it. you know, and I think that distinctly is going away. Like, I think that people won't be able to do that. We've accelerated that. It was already trending up. We've seen essentially 10 years of transition in 2 or 3 months. Yeah, I think we're over the hump on that one. Do I think offices are going away? No. I think you're going to need to go to the office sometimes. I think you're going to go meet people. Do I think we will have 150 conferences a year? No.
We shall see.
partly because I think that there is a lot of exposed inefficiency in all that. And people are going to start figuring out the way that makes sense, right? The bit that makes sense and the best way to do it that way.
Let me just try to put a pin in this. What I would say is this is a great, great time to begin having roadmap meetings with your clients. And what I would use, the mnemonic I would use is say, pick 10 things that have changed during this time. Which will you keep and which would you like to get rid of? And my guess is you will keep 3 out of 10 that made a huge difference in the quality of life or the quality of service or the quality of your business or your profitability. And the rest you will go happily back to the way that you've always done it. Yeah. And I think, and just to acknowledge, 30% change is a massive change.
That was exactly what I was about to say. Is 30% change pretty good? Like, that's a pretty significant thing.
Because if you think about your lifetime, in my lifetime, cars have changed a little here, a little there. They've gotten more efficient and they're cooler and this and that. But fundamentally, you got 4 wheels and a steering wheel and a stop and a go and some lights.
And they don't fly.
Yeah. So, where's my freaking flying car? But the other thing about it is. We are doing some generalization. I think there are going to be some businesses that list is 8 out of 10. And there may be some businesses that are 1 out of 10. It's a spectrum. You will see, right. You will see different people on that. And they may have figured out that they have new service offerings that are better and more profitable based on what they're doing now. So I think that's the other piece to understand.
Just a note about conferences, because conferences are driven fundamentally by the vendor's experience at the conference. And until the vendors can get an interactive experience online that rivals the experience they had in person, I think those conferences you can expect them all to come back.
I don't know. We'll see.
If they don't suck, they will come back.
Unless they have success advertising on the Killing It podcast. Wow. So that's entirely possible.
That's a whole discussion for those advertisers that are doing quite well. But
well, thank you for spending a half hour with us on episode 82 of the Killing It podcast.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.